And Abe and Joe cover politics, just history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of listener comments. At 9 on Alternative Radio, we hear from award-winning independent documentary filmmaker Sanjay Kak on the crisis in Kashmir. At 10 on Flashpoints, Dennis Bernstein covers rebellion in Iraq and political turmoil in Bolivia. At 11, it's Stage and Studio, and Dee May speaks to Marissa Wolf, Artistic Director of Portland Center Stage. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Portland artist Tom Kramer about his show Journey to the Third Dimension.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KABU in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. The events committee meets the third Monday of every month at 5 o'clock p.m.
Join KABU by December 31st and receive free gifts and prizes from the Give Guide. Just click the donate banner on the KABU app to keep community radio strong and vibrant in Portland and beyond.
Hey, good morning. It's sort of not raining. It's sort of not cold. It's sort of not anything. It's out there. This is KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial, FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and me, Joe Uris. Abe can't be here because he has to work. Work, 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 work. I would love to hear from you, 231-8187. I was hoping, wishing for more women calling us. It's not a particular question of bias. It's a question of more representation. Anyway, I've got a couple, three things I'll start out with and see where it goes. Because, you know, I really want you out there to carry the show. First of all, I looked at the New York Times, and there's a Paul Krugman article pointing out that the reason why tariffs are so popular with Donald Trump is because it increases his power. In fact, the reason why anything happens in this government at this time, at the direction of this president, is because it increases his power. Yesterday, we were treated to some weird defense of the president in the impeachment hearings, and today I think they're going to go ahead with the direction of impeachment. It's okay with me if they impeach him. I know that it'll be blocked in the Senate because Mitch McConnell, the great turtle, will be ready to stop anything like that happening. The loyalty of the Republicans to Trump is very interesting and a bit peculiar. So think on that. Think on how peculiar it is, and think on how crisis-ridden our social fabric is. Consider the fact, for example, that we have a huge homeless population in almost every city, well, in every city of the United States, and particularly in Portland, where apparently the people who clear homeless out steal their stuff. What do I mean steal? I don't think they keep it. I think they take it and throw it away if it's at all funky. And you know, when you live on the street, things get funky. So that's something. And then you have the issue of climate crisis. The overarching reality of the situation of humans on this planet is climate destruction. And this is indisputable at this point. And yet, we have dithery silliness going on with the administration and a president who has only one goal in the universe, the beatification of Donald Trump, the unsaint. I would love to hear from you. Remember the number, 231-8187. And we actually have people online, so I'm going to go out to George. George, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe. Thank you for your disturbing resume of the facts of...
What can I do? What can I say?
Well, you've said some important things. I have something that's on something else that you said a week ago, and it will be brief.
Okay.
And about a week ago, you mentioned a book by Professor Timothy Snyder of Yale that you had read, and I happened to have found a book by a Professor Grover Fur about Professor Snyder's book, and the cover of Grover Fur's book says it all about Fur's attitude here, or his finding. The subtitle is "The Evidence That Every Accusation Against Joseph Stalin and the Soviet Union in Timothy Snyder's Bloodlands is False." Now, this is what it says on the cover of Grover.
I don't really think that's true, but go ahead.
Okay, so Grover Fur, in his 400-and-some-odd page book, Blood Lies, published in August 2014, goes and he says, on point after point of Snyder's book, he brings up what his examination, over which took him several years, checking every source that Snyder used to support his views on the Soviet Union, and he said that in every case when he checked the sources, they did not support what Professor Snyder had said.
Really?
That's what he says, and he says it's in what he found is in this book by Grover Fur. The book's title is Blood Lies, which is, you know, a sort of paraphrase of Professor Snyder's book, Bloodlands. So I don't know, but I thought you might be interested, and I will say this book has a lot of quotations from Professor Snyder's book, and many of them are in Ukrainian first and then translated into English. But I think the book is interesting, but I don't want to get in the way of their main topic that you mentioned, which is absolutely vital. So if I may, I'll just have me, having mentioned this book, which is available, I think it has to be mail ordered, but it's available. Blood Lies by Grover Fur.
Fur is an F-E-R or F-U-R?
Oh, F-U-R-R. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Listen, I want to thank you for that. I'll look into that. Here's the deal. I just want to summarize what I think I understand now. A lot of people, myself included, had real positive dreams about the left of the People's Republic of China and of the Soviet Union. The problem was always, in both cases, they had totalitarian regimes, which in both cases involved a lot of cruelty and a lot of murder. There's no question about that. There was also, in the case of Russia, of the Soviet Union, still, by the way, a great deal of anti-Semitism. So the what happened in the Crimea or in Kiev or in any part of the lands called the Blood Lands really did happen. Now, as to the detail, as to the causation, as to what was going on, I am not an expert on all of that. So I have no particular comment on it. I can only say that in retrospect, and having been around for a long time, there's no question that Stalin was whimsical in some cases, very harsh in many cases, and he was willing to kill to keep power and maintain power.
Do you know what Grover Fur says about every one of those charges?
What?
And I couldn't believe it myself. He says they are baseless. He uses the word, the evidence is not there. Once you scrutinize, we have been the victims of I guess he would call it a propaganda operation designed to destroy any reputation of justice and fairness and goodness in the Soviet Union.
Well, there may be truth to the fact that we were propagandizing against the Soviet Union forever, and it's hard to separate truth from fiction in any event. But from what I understand, and I don't think it's just a rumor or mythos, the policies of the Stalin regime were harsh, cruel, and excessive. And
you know, Grover Fur says that he has the evidence in this book that will show that all of that is not supported by careful analysis, and it's a big, fat book, but you've done a hell of a lot of work, and I need to get out of the way of this program.
Yeah, okay. I don't really want to spend time discussing the goodness or badness of Joseph Stalin, but thank you for the call and telling us about Fur.
Sure, I'm glad to be able. Okay.
Okay, so 231-8187, I really want to concentrate on the fact that there's a weird thing going on in the United States right now. We elected a president with a minority of the votes. We really need to change the system. Obviously, that was bad. We also know that there was an enormous amount of manipulation by Russia in the election, and now there's a weird thing being suggested by the Republicans that somehow it was the Ukraine. And all of that could be simply something that creates enormous confusion in our minds, and I'm afraid that there's not enough understanding of what exactly it is that Trump has done to assure that he does not get to be president again. He must not be president again, because what he has done so far has countered every effort at international cooperation, every effort at social justice, and it's very, very scary. But let's hear from other people. Let's go 231-8187. Let's go out to Harvey. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi there.
Hi.
Well, I believe that I found the most important reason why President Trump and his Republican administration want to cut around 688,000 single able-bodied SNAP recipients between the ages of 18 and 49 with no dependents from the supplemental nutritional program.
Yeah, I'm glad you're bringing that up. That's very important.
You're going to like this. In an article published on July 22nd, 2019, titled Manning the Military, America's Problem, it said that in 1973, President Richard Nixon implemented the all-volunteer force, which did away with conscription. So today, only a small portion of Americans have volunteered to serve in the armed forces, and over the past 18 years of endless war, only 1% of the population has been willing to enlist in the military. So in my estimation, the Trump administration is trying to make an end run around conscription by depriving single, able-bodied, poor and unemployed 18 to 49-year-old SNAP recipients with no dependents of their basic nutritional needs, so they'll become hungry and desperate enough to join the armed forces as a source of employment.
Well, without getting all conspiratorial and such, I think that it is the case that this whole effort to create, and this is something that really needs to be thought about, as is it deliberate or is it consequence of simple fact? Clearly, if you are in the, let's say, lower one half even of the population in terms of income, you are in desperate straits. Wages are stifled, yet there is full employment, supposedly. At the same time, it's really clear that if you join the armed forces, at the very least, you and your dependents will get fed and health care and so on. So, yeah, having a volunteer army depends upon it being advantageous to join the armed forces. And having endless war, which is what we're doing, is a part of that process. So, in a way, that's clearly true.
A side note is that even though there's millions and millions of war games sold to kids, you know, on the videos there.
Oh, yeah.
I think that actually they're working to actually diminish the children's desire to go to war, because they see, even though it's like simulated and it's pretty accurate stuff, all the blood and gore and everything like that, I think they get enough of it there, and they don't want to necessarily manifest it in reality. They want to close the game down and walk out into a street and everything is safe in their world. So I think actually that there is the possibility that video games, war video games, haven't really enticed the youth to go to war. It's just the opposite, because only 1% of the population has been willing to enlist in the military.
Well, yeah, certainly it's a small percentage of population, and there are numbers of reasons why people would join the military. There are careerists, both in the officer ranks and in the general ranks, and there are people who are desperate, and then there are authentically patriots. So there's a lot of stuff going on there, but all of it depends on a war state, and that's what we have been for a long, long time, actually really since the beginning of World War II.
Instead, and increasingly it's in the name of petroleum, fossil fuels.
Oh, yeah, right, absolutely.
Now, they dispatched the Ninth Fleet to protect the oil tankers in the passing through the Straits of Hormuz in the Persian Gulf. So, you know, it's if we make every effort to get off of fossil fuels individually and collectively, we could diminish our need to go to war for oil and coal and all that.
Well, that's true, but I'm not sure we would diminish the effect of the government's efforts to create a powerful imperial force. But I think your point is really well taken, and
Thank
it's
you.
Obvious to me, and at least, and I think to a lot of us, that we're on a death trip. That in the end, we're poisoning ourselves, we're poisoning the planet, and we're poisoning it largely through the use of fossil fuels when we have authentic alternatives in other kinds of energy delivery systems. Anyway, I want to thank you for the call, and I do think that a lot of people join the military for a lot of different reasons, one of which, and I don't want to discredit this, is an authentic patriotism, as well as a strong authoritarian bent. And I'd love to hear from people on this topic as well. 231-8187, and I want to thank you for the call. Okay, I'm taking a deep breath here. My partner had to work. Can you imagine that? Work, 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 work. And he couldn't be here today. So it's really up to you and me to make the show interesting. I'm going to say something that I say often, but it doesn't get a lot of response. I think it has to do with the structure of our culture. But I would wish very sincerely that we had more female callers. It's not that women are so different or something like that. It's that they are part, one half at least, of a representative sample of everyone who listens or participates in the discussion, and their absence is felt. So, you know, think on that. Don't worry about it, but think on it. I wanted to talk a little bit again about what's going on with the impeachment. Getting rid of Trump is not, by impeachment and then a trial in the Senate, is not likely. Impeaching him becomes increasingly certain. Yesterday's bizarre performances in defense of him and the weird way that Republican senators have latched onto him, kind of like leeches on a big bloated balloon, you know, it's very scary, very sickening, and very counter reality. But here's what I think is important to understand. We have created, over the years and now more intensely than ever, two worlds of consciousness about politics. There is a very, I would say, very reactionary, locked into place, fearful, large number of largely white, largely male population that actually are very frightened of the demographic reality of the changes in the population. The fact that we are becoming a nation of many different peoples, and that those many different peoples often have a darker skin, and that it is also a population of many, many women, that scares some. And that is a force that can cause people to lose sight of reality or never have that sight of reality. So, you know, I'm making a serious criticism here, and I don't know how seriously people will take that, but it's kind of that way. At the same time, all the evidence that I see in the so-called, what does Trump call it, the fake news, all of the evidence of the New York Times and all the legit publications, including the Wall Street Journal, point to the fact that this is a very bad administration full of people who are crooks, liars, and thieves. So, having said that, I hope they don't take me away. Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Pear, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
You know, that rhymes.
Well, you know, one of the House just voted two articles of impeachment.
Oh, I missed that. I left home
too
soon.
That happened earlier this morning.
Uh-huh.
And one of them has to do with obstruction of justice, and one has to do with, you know, which has to do with the Trump getting in the way of this military aid to Ukraine.
Uh-huh.
And I would just say that, okay, what Trump did was wrong, if that's what he did, but the military aid is itself a wrong thing to do. So it's like...
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying that aid, military aid to Ukraine in the face of the Russian advance is wrong?
Yes. Yes, because it preceded the Russian advance. In other words, this whole thing started a lot sooner. It started with NATO expanding up to Russia's borders. It had to do with the U.S. helped overthrow an elected president of Ukraine. Victoria Nuland was in the streets of Kiev passing mm-hmm. out cookies to the rioters. She and the ambassador were caught on the phone talking about who they would install as the next president of Ukraine. She also said something to the effect of screw the EU, and she talked about how the U.S. has spent $5 billion getting its way in Ukraine.
Well, then, wouldn't it logically mean that Trump's reluctance to support Ukraine is a good thing?
Well, what it means is that we're caught between two really pretty lousy choices. We had Trump, who everybody knows what a jerk Trump is, but with these pro-war Democrats, to me, are, in a way, they're dangerous too, maybe even more dangerous, because they're more they're not as obviously bonkers as Trump is. So we have we're given this lousy, rotten choice, and here in Oregon, you know, I mean, I could vote for Green Party without any fear of that helping Trump, because, you know, Oregon is not a swing state. But if I was living in a swing state and I was faced with this choice, I would really be very angry and resentful at a system that puts it like that, that gives me two rotten choices. And I would kind of hate, I might vote for the Democrat, pro-war Democrat, but I would hate myself. This is, and then the thing, one more point is that the Democrats have joined with the Republicans in passing a military budget that's getting up to $1 trillion a year. Now, you just talked earlier about homelessness and all these other social things. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's got to go downhill because they're spending all our money on the military. It's crazy. It really is. And this is a choice we are given in this binary system. It's very ugly.
Well, I agree with you in large part. I think that looking at the history of the United States in modern times, beginning with World War II and ending now, or not ending, and continuing through now, we changed from a state of social concern with a lot of programs that were social democratic, or at least potentially so, under Roosevelt, into a state that embraced those at the same time that it created a warfare state permanently. And that warfare state, even with Eisenhower warning against the military-industrial complex toward the end of his career as president, even without all that, we definitely have a system that is largely dependent on the military-industrial complex. And I think C. Wright Mills, a very famous professor out of Columbia, carefully proved that way back in the late 50s. So I think we know what's happening, and I think your criticisms are important and largely correct. But, and this is something that worries me a great deal, if one becomes paralyzed, by the fact that the Democrat candidate, whoever the hell it's going to be, God forgive me, Biden, or somebody else, it is really incumbent upon us to recognize that Trump goes beyond anything awful that we've ever had before, including, ironically, Richard Nixon or the previous Republican administrations. He is authentically a self-concerned bigot and crook and a scary fella who doesn't care what happens to anybody except himself. And it's very corrupt, and it's very scary, and it's something that has to be gotten rid of. So, you know, we're really in a bind here, as you suggest. And the answer to that bind isn't just the binary Trump or anti-Trump. It's more than that. But before we can correctly attempt to create a social democracy as in Northern Europe, we have to get rid of this crook. So we're caught in a real, real difficult situation. And Per, I want to thank you for calling, and I want to hope for some other calls. I'm still looking for women. 231-8187. Taking a deep breath here. I'm thinking about this stuff, and I'm really wondering what it takes in our consciousness to comprehend and to embrace the complex contradictions that are faced in this weird politics that we've had in this country for so long. The last time we had any movement towards social democracy really was in the Great Depression. And then, of course, during World War II, which made sense, and actually even into the Eisenhower administration. But all of that also was paralleled with the creation of nuclear weapons, with the creating of a standing military of vast size, and the creation of weapon systems of vast size. So all of that is still the case, and we are still the largest imperial power in modern history. All of that must be understood and embraced, and how do we deal with that at the same time that some weird, creepy creature like Trump ends up as the President of the United States with actually a minority of support, and then he is able to, what do you want to call them, weaponize a whole population of people who believe in an alternative universe and have beliefs in so-called news that is actually designed to deceive. Anyway, I do want to hear from some more people. 231-8187. Molly, you're on the air.
Molly? Yes, good morning, Joe.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, well, I thought as a woman I would call, and you had asked for that, and I just want to quote Thomas Hardy, who lived from 1840 to 1928, before I say anything.
Okay.
It is difficult for a woman to define her feelings in a language which is chiefly made by men to express theirs. And that was in, late 1800s. So I just want to say for women, and as far as the impeachment, I think women have really come to their day. I think Nancy Pelosi has been a great example of a woman holding back in the beginning. She wasn't going to do anything about this impeachment thing. And everyone was like, do it, Nancy. But she held back, and I think she was very wise in doing that. She waited till the right time. And I think there are several women, great ones, running for president. And I think we may have not been ready for Hillary. There were problems there, but I think we really are. And I think if anyone can bring Trump down, it's a woman. And I just want to say that for the record.
No, that's fine.
Yeah. And, the impeachment process has been, in my eyes, a breath of fresh air to see the American government working, which we haven't seen. Some kind of sanity since we've had President Trump. So it's really wonderful to see some kind of, rule of law and rational thinking and people doing their homework taking place. It gives me hope.
Yeah, and what is curious to me, and this is, it's a curiosity, I know why, but it's still curious, why Republicans, who used to have a politics, which often I disagreed with, but was a politics, a real belief system, have turned into sycophants, total supporters of this crook. And that's very discouraging. Very, very discouraging.
I'd like to hear your answer as to why.
Opportunism? I think it's straight opportunism. But what do I know?
Right. Well, they do seem to... I finally saw that Michael Moore movie, Fahrenheit 11/9 or whatever. But the thing that really got me is how Trump started the whole, if people have seen that movie, I highly recommend everyone seeing it because he explains, Michael Moore does, how Trump ended up where he is. And it's just appalling. He just did it as a joke and thought, wow, this is working and I'm going to go for it. And he did, because there were people out there that unfortunately seemed to like what he was saying.
Well, there's that, but there's also the fact that NBC, which now has MSNBC, which is its liberal arm, NBC is largely responsible because they created this, show where Trump, supposedly this great executive, who in fact is a guy who's never earned a cent of his own money ever and has not been a moral man ever, ends up being this kind of hero who can make judgment of other people striving to get a good gig. It's weird, and it worked, and because it worked, it gave him enormous stature among people who watch a lot of TV.
Well, unfortunately, that was also made very obvious and clear, and was, to me, very shocking, because it just goes to show greed works on both sides of the coin, and even the very good and, good-minded, thinking that they're doing something right, still the greed gets in there, and I think greed is our worst enemy here. And I just want to say for women, again, that being on the biological scale, the female of the species, and bearing the children of the race that we are, Homo sapiens, mm-hmm. that they have more of a perhaps a less greedy sense of the world because they have children that they give up so much for, including the men that they give up so much for. You know, I've been reading a lot about women artists, Celia Paul, and how she gave up so much for Lucien Freud, and now she's coming into her own as a woman artist. But mm-hmm. you know, who are the muses for the women? You know.
And well, that's you're raising an interesting point. I am not a feminist scholar, and I am not super knowledgeable about these issues. But it seems clear to me that women give up a lot in a sexist society like this one. And right. I think that that's something that ought to be coming to an end. Certainly, the rulership of men has not brought us to a great climax. Sorry, that might be a wrong term. Anyway.
Well, no, it's very appropriate, actually. Yeah, and a little message from an old friend. What is the secret you whisper to keep you going on a hike? That's the answer. It was nice talking to you,
okay.
And this is a great show.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. 231-8187. I think Robbie is next. Robbie, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Pretty good.
All right. I just wanted to say, you know, I definitely think a woman should be in office. Unfortunately, I don't think the ones that we have for selection are going to win. It seems like the polling is not doing well. Furthermore, I also think that's kind of like a dangerous idea just to say like, oh, if they're a woman, you know, they're going to be better, which I ironically just did. But you have to look at the policies that they're promoting. You were saying earlier, we have to focus on before doing a progressive change, we need to get the Trump out. That's exactly what got that type of thinking is exactly what got Trump into office. The fact that the Democrats don't have a backbone, they basically cave in to whatever establishment oligarch candidate gets in there. And then we say, and I think the worst thing about Trump is a person like you being like, well, it's better than Trump, so we have to vote for him. And that's what actually got us into this mess, because instead of people looking at the DNC rigging an election in 2016, we just said, well, we got to beat Trump. And I think if we were actually to address the issues that are at the core foundation of this racist nation, this patriarchal society, if we were to actually address it, you know, we could, we wouldn't have stood for the DNC giving us Hillary Clinton. But ironically, we come down to these things and we say things like, oh, well, she's a woman. What, is it not ready for a woman candidate? No, I'm an activist. I'm not a Democrat. And I'm tired of the Democratic Party trying to pretend that they're a progressive platform, because that's who they have to pretend they are. And then they do the bait and switch. Elizabeth Warren no longer being for Medicare for all, lying to the black parents. I don't understand why we support all these politician lawyers when, you know, but now Trump's like, oh, well, it's either Trump or them, so we got to do this. And the thing about it is I think if we actually all stood together and said that, you know what, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, that is an oligarch, that they were getting Burisma. They had the ex-CIA member on that board. This is at a time when we were trying to influence a foreign nation's oil. And that's okay, because it was, quote unquote, in American interests. And I'm just tired of it. I'm tired. I think if Democrats called out corruption, then we could get further.
Well, I appreciate the call. There's some things I agree with and some I don't. I'm going to let other people respond. But thank you very much for the call. Let's go to the phones. 231-8187. Gabriella, I think it is next up.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to know why you want women to call you, Joe.
I'm sorry, why I want women to call me? It's not me. I want women to be on the air.
Oh, okay. Well, all right. I'm in the air. So, hello?
Yeah, go ahead. Are you there? Gabriella.
Yeah, I lost you for a minute.
Yeah, go ahead.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
So you want women to be on the air. And, well, maybe not many women call to KBOO or other radios, but that doesn't mean we are not paying attention or being engaged in the political process.
Well, I hope you're right. I think you probably are, so that's a good point.
Yeah. So, also, I particularly might not go in the air much.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm tired of hearing other women and men, mostly men, but sometimes other women, like refuting what we say, or I don't know, you have to prove yourself more. And I don't think life is about proving yourself, but it took me, you know, 4 decades to figure that out. So unless it's something that just is very important to me, or I think is absolutely wrong and misleading that I hear in a radio or read in a newspaper, I myself and other women, most of the women I know, we just let it go.
Well, that's
because
it.
It's not
that,
gonna...
Yeah, I understand this, and it's an interesting phenomenon. Remember that what we're doing, this is just radio. This is just talk radio. And it is not a profound experience. It's just, you know, people sharing their ideas and their thoughts and perhaps even evidence that is significant to questions that we're discussing. And the fact that I'm asking for more women is both the ritual of acknowledging that we are men, only half the population, but also the fact that there are opinions that do not get heard here. And some of those surely are opinions from women.
Yeah. I agree with what you're saying, except I think that especially KBOO,
mm-hmm.
which I support and I'm a member,
mm-hmm.
Do more than talking. And you do participate in the process just by talking and bringing your opinion and other people's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
You form opinion of people that listen to you. You don't tell them what to think, but by just listening, then you're radio, right?
Yeah.
It could be Limbo's program or any ultra-right scary radio. They do.
Yeah, I don't, I don't know, Gabrielle, you raise an interesting idea. I don't know who our audience is. We have not got the money to really find out. We don't know their ages. We don't know their sexual orientation or their sex. We don't know their race or a lot of other things. All we know is what we hear. And I'm wanting to have us hear more voices. And that's why I'm essentially pushing one of the simplest things, which is let's get more women on the air.
I know. So the last thing I'm going to tell you, I'm sure there's more people there, is that your program is at 8 in the morning. So it's hard when we're working to stop working and give you a call.
That's a very good point. Listen, I want to give some others, speaking of women, a chance.
Thank you.
And I thank you for the call. 231-8187. I believe we have a woman, ironically, Linda. You're on the air.
Hi, Joe. It's Linda. Hey, I think that maybe what you should try, given that you have fairly frequent absences from your partner for his work, is that you might think about scheduling in co-hosts who are female, and look around the women that you know or you're reading about and then, you know, around different causes or different issues and have them on. And
I think that's
that
a nice idea.
Difference in the balance of how many women would be calling in.
I think, you know, I think that's a good idea and I think I should explore it. I also want to say, and this is just sort of true, for a long time I did commercial radio. Well, it wasn't a long time, a couple of years. And I developed certain patterns, certain habits, certain things that I know that work on air, and they work even here on air. But it's difficult, it's really difficult to work out a relationship with somebody. Remember that when I'm with Abe, I'm a character in a play. I'm not me exactly. Do you follow me?
Well, yeah, I know that. But I think in terms of having women on, I think it's both how both of you might interact with women. That's something to watch. But I also think it might be just an internal bias on our part to want to hear women talking
no,
about
No, I think
these
that's
things.
A good criticism.
And so if that's true, you could bring them on. You don't have to wait for us to call.
Well, I don't disagree with that.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. I'm going to let you go on to the next great person. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You know, this is an interesting. I'm not wanting to fall into a meta conversation about who the heck is on the air. It's not my shtick, as it were. But I do think it is important to hear from everyone who can and wants to be on the air. 231-8187. We have who is this? Bit? Is that right? You're on the
BT.
Air. Oh, BT. I know you. Go ahead, BT. Yeah.
Yeah, I haven't called in a while because I work so often.
And well, lucky you.
I take a PTO day off that I, you know, because I accumulate so many, I make sure that it's a Tuesday so that I can call Joe and Abe.
Wow.
If you're talking about something I'm interested in. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, I had another job one time ago. I used to sneak off into the corner somewhere and call, but it's not easy to do it. Anyway. Well, I just wanted to mention, you mentioned early on something that needed to be corrected.
Okay.
Which is comment about the impeachment. You said that it will be blocked by the Senate. Well, the Senate doesn't block an impeachment if they fail to vote to remove. And you ought to know that. You know, you take someone like Andrew Johnson, who was a terrible guy to have in the White House, particularly following Lincoln and what had just been accomplished, because he was not exactly an anti-slavery guy.
No, he was a reactionary, and he was actually Lincoln's choice so that he could unite the country at whatever the heck that meant.
Yeah, and it's too bad. In looking back, I don't even think he really needed to worry about that kind of a union ticket, but, you know, I guess that's too much of
too much hindsight, man.
Yeah, but it's possible, but, you know, he didn't want to take that chance. But the thing is, Andrew Johnson had every right as president to get rid of a Secretary of War that he didn't want. But there had been a law passed by the not long before that that he couldn't remove a cabinet member. See, and that was unconstitutional even before the court ruled on it. So they were getting rid of him for that, and fortunately the Senate didn't go along with that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not obligated to rubber stamp an impeachment, so the Senate doesn't block it. You know, of course you can have a political decision, say, oh, we're not going to do this, but this current one here, it's borderline, and I don't really like it, but not that I like the guy. I wound up voting for Libertarian as usual, because I don't like the guy's personality. I just thought it was he has a terrible personality to have. When you're in the White House, you know, you've got, you know, billions of people listening to you every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of an embarrassment. It's like a previous caller mentioned, I thought that this was the worst choice that the American people ever had for president, was the Hillary Trump thing. Awful choice.
Well, I don't think it was the worst choice we've ever had, but I think it was very unfortunate.
I think it was the worst choice, but it's
okay,
pretty
well,
close.
Anyway.
Matter of fact, the interesting thing is, you know, I have on my wall, the first time I've ever done it, a picture of a president on my wall. I have a picture. It's a dual portrait. It's got Obama on the left and Trump on the right.
Really?
And underneath it says, they kept Hillary out of the White House. And that's how much that means.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm telling you, Joe, that's great.
Okay.
Hey, Joe, maybe I'll call you in a couple of weeks. I have another Tuesday off.
Okay, man. Listen, thanks for the call.
See you.
Yeah. Let's go to the phone, 231-8187. We have Sean.
Good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
Good morning. Hey, well, that was interesting. I think the previous caller just mentioned that he voted Libertarian.
Yeah, he did say that.
Isn't that quite ironic?
Well, I find
that is, Trump is following a very libertarian rule guided by the Koch brothers, who very much helped to put him in office.
Well, in fairness to libertarianism, I don't think Trump's a libertarian. What I think he is a fascist, and that's different, very different.
Yeah, but he's been following a very, let's put it this way. He has been following a very libertarian road based upon what the Koch brothers, I mean, this goes into...
Well, the Koch, wait a minute, man. The Koch brothers are not libertarians. They're monopoly capitalists, you know, let's be clear.
Well, they are, but a lot of their basis going back in the history, you know, and again, if you go back and read about this very thing in whether it's Gene Meyer's book or Dark Money or in Democracy in Chains, they talk specifically about how the very basis of the where he's come to and so forth has been in a libertarian vein as well. I mean, you know, anyway, we could go on about that, but
yes,
there is so much involved in this. But, you know, a couple points is I just want to say that I wish you had had a little more discussion with the fellow that came on right after, I believe her name is Molly. I just found it kind of interesting you didn't stay on and have any conversation about some of the points he made, and I think part of it was saying how, you know, a lot of what's going on here is racism, and also, you know, when the DNC itself and the Democratic Party undermines its own self, that says a lot right there. I mean, that says there's a lot of downfall going on right there.
Well, I agree. I mean, I think, I want to be clear here. I think that we are faced with not great choices, but given what we're faced with, i.e. not great choices, we can recognize a fascist when one appears.
Yeah. So my main point, I wanted to point out that, you know, if people haven't seen or forgotten this, I remember when I read Frederick Douglass, I really came to realize how much our whole system of government is based off of slavery. And so when the New York Times came out with that expose on how the whole system of our government and economy, healthcare, and everything is based off of slavery, you know, that just, it just verified that. So if anybody has not read it, and if you have, you know, back in August, mm-hmm. New York Times Magazine had an incredible series of stories on this. And I just wanted to quickly just, you know, the first one is our founding ideals of liberty and equality were false when they were written.
Mm-hmm.
Second story is, in order to understand the brutality of American capitalism, you have to start on the plantation.
Oh, I agree with both of those.
And why doesn't the United States have universal health care? Because the answer begins with the policies enacted after the Civil War. When, you know, I mean, this is a very big basis that is kind of forgotten about, and it just brings home, it's not the only thing, obviously, but it is the very foundations of where we are today.
Well,
so I just want to recommend, if anybody hasn't read this, they really need to go.
No, I think those are useful pieces. I want to be clear personally. As far as I'm concerned, we really are a society built around late-stage capitalism, as I call it, monopoly capitalism. And we have never been, from our very founding, an equitable society. And that's really important. And that's something we gets buried when we teach history in schools, particularly in the high schools and grade schools. I want to get some more callers in. 231-8187. Lisa, you're on the air. Lisa?
Hi, how are you?
I'm okay so far.
Okay, get you off my speakerphone on my little bad phone here. I just wanted to say that, and thanks for your work. Freedom of speech is a rare gift in this country, and I'm glad that you're doing it. As I said, I believe that there are wolves at the window all the time. There are people trying to get into our pockets in the television. There are, you know, corporations that are overstepping their boundaries. You know, we know all the problems. Our country is broken. Families, rules, all of that stuff. And it's our responsibility to heal and move forward from here. I'm so excited about today and the hearings and how the Democrats have done. I'm really proud to be American this week, more so than the last couple, 3 years, that's for sure. And arm our children, our kids, and our families with the tools that they need to resist the insanity that has gripped our country. I used to be a state worker in Salem, and so seeing it from the policy perspective, I think the Dems did a great job on that. Additionally, I'll leave with the fact that they know exactly what they're doing. the politicians, everybody, your uncle that kicks you off, the guy that just cut me off on the freeway. We all have access to the same information, you know, in this country, unless you're in a rural area where the internet's terrible, you know, blah, blah, blah. However, we all have access to the same information.
Mm-hmm.
So they know exactly what they're doing. See, when you think of it, I think when we think of it like that, I think it flips it on its head, where we need to be in control of the situation and arm ourselves that there are wolves at the door.
I think you're right in large part. I think people have responsibility, and many of us don't know that we have responsibility, are afraid to take responsibility, and frequently are operating on false premises.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And so I read a really good book about sociopaths, and it said that there's 1 in 100 people are sociopaths. So they're literally born with the inability to have compassion, remorse, things of that nature.
Like Trump.
For them. Right, exactly. People are pawns for them. They're just a game. So if you find yourself in a situation with somebody where they're saying that white wall is black, or, you know, that is not the candy bar you want, it's like, So I think it's a great time to think about being the voice of reason. Mm-hmm. Whoever's strong enough to stand up for it, let's do it. Let's say, I'm a rebel patriot, so I just, you know, let's move forward. And, you know, men and women, you said that you don't, one of the ladies, you said that you don't get enough women calling. Well, they're working.
Well, now that's an interesting. I will buy that. I will buy that.
No, I know.
I know you're half kidding, but half serious. And I really want to thank you for the call.
Oh, excellent. Thanks for your work. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Who's next, Susan?
Hi.
I just want to recite the number before you talk. 231-8187. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning.
Good morning.
Joe, I just wanted to reconfirm with you that this is community radio.
Uh-huh.
And that in a progressive community that we are,
mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'm suggesting a write-in. If you can't call in, write in for people to espouse their beliefs in the progressive radio programming. And so your comment about your background and your idiosyncrasies about hosting a show, that needs to be looked at yourself. I mean, myself, I'm 71 years old, and I have been spending the last 30, 40 years reinventing my thoughts on living in this world. So I constantly am educating myself on the correct, on the real histories and how we can progress, and involving myself in the community. And I invite you, Joe, to do that same, to reach out and bring on an equitable partners, people who will rotate in and out, and so that you have that opportunity to grow even further with your programming.
Well, I appreciate what you're saying, but I'm curious about how old you think I am.
I think you're probably in your 60s.
Oh, no.
Oh, well, it's not how old we are. I'm just saying that.
No, I'm really old is what I'm saying.
Okay.
Really old.
Well, and you're white male, and I'm
absolutely
a white female, and I think we're always trying to bring community into our soul.
Yeah, I do agree with a lot of what you're saying, but I also want to point out that there is talk radio here 5 days a week, and the variety of people is large. And many of those people are women. But I don't want to get into a defensive behavior because I don't think that's warranted. I do think, however, that it is difficult with a one-hour opportunity once a week to create a truly equitable kind of radio. But I think the idea of having rotating hosts is not a bad idea, and we'll think about how we can do that. But I the arrangement I have with Abe, and I think it's important, is about not only informing but entertaining. The problem is, if we're not entertaining, why would people want to hear us?
That's why I don't listen very often. But I tuned in today, and the woman who first, I had the phone in my hand when the one woman said about, you know, bringing on a guest. That is exactly what I was calling about.
Okay.
So I'm a second vote, and I'm calling for a write-in for anybody.
Okay.
And maybe this is their opportunity to listen to talk radio. They don't have it at other times, and they can't get in, or they don't like the conversation, banter that you do. And so I thank you very much for this time to put out my opinions.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
Okay. I appreciate the call. I want to go on to the next caller, 231-8187. I believe it's Mark. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joe. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great show and a great great listeners, great comments. I wanted to add an important element to the contradictions that we face, and that is financialization, that the financial markets uncoupled from the real economy, made themselves independent, and this was through the Democratic, through Clinton's abolition of the Glass-Steagall Act, when he broke down the firewall between commercial and investment banks, and
that's really true. I mean, that is a very important point.
Encouraged speculation. Now we are in a world where we are overworked and underfunded, where there's a real lack of public investment and infrastructure investment.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. Absolutely.
So this is the real challenge, and I'm just amazed that a subject like financialization can be just made taboo by the corporate media and by the campaign debates. You know, I think this is a real crisis that we face, that the real economy is really suffering, and people don't have quality jobs.
No, I agree, but I think both Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders are bringing up the question of financialization,
and that's very exciting. That they're fighters, and they're knowledgeable about the financial markets. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I want to give some others a chance, and I do appreciate your call. 231-8187. We're running out of time. Let's go to Tina. Tina, you're there. Yes?
Yes, I am.
Talk.
I just wanted to say that I'm not a very political person, but I appreciate what you do, and I appreciate how you educate. And myself, and I'm an artist, and I just so happen that sometimes the demographic of the people that respond to my art isn't the demographic that I necessarily want to hit. So just being conscious of that in itself is, that self-awareness is good. So I appreciate what you do. And I just didn't really appreciate you getting ragged on about not having enough women. You know, just you volunteering your time is.
I think criticism is important, and I think having it on the radio is fine.
Well, I appreciate what you do. Just wanted to let you know that.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks a lot for the call. You know, it's been interesting. I didn't plan on being the guy talking as the host of the show today. Conditions created that. I don't know if people notice, but my persona as me is different than my persona as the performer who works with a partner in a shtick-based thing. So think on that, because it is performance, and there's some degree, very small probably, art to it. And we appreciate your listening to us, and we really like having lots of people call, and I did not mean to exclude men by calling for women. I'm just looking for greater equity. And I also would like more people of color. Of course, I have no idea who that is in terms of who I hear. I want to thank you all, and I want to urge you to stay tuned to KBOO, and I want to remind you that we are the best, not only in public affairs, but in music. And you should be listening to us, and you should be giving us money, because we can't exist without it. And I want to thank you all, and I'll see you next week.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Mark Brown Trio CD Release Party on Sunday, December 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Artichoke Music in Portland. The Mark Brown Trio celebrates the release of their CD called Had My Fill of the Moon. The Mark Brown Trio also features Jan DeWeese and Jim Boland. The show is a benefit for Artichoke Music. Again, that's the Mark Brown Trio CD Release Party on Sunday, December 8th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Artichoke Music, 2007 Southeast Powell Boulevard.